Okay. So this is day 6 of the rainy season retreat. 21st century ethics, bodhisattvas in training. And tonight's talk is on forgiveness. And actually there's not a lot on forgiveness in the Pali Canon. It's not particularly a kind of Buddhist... It comes into a lot of things, but the Buddha doesn't really directly talk about forgiveness. And that's, I think, partly because we tend to it tends to be theistic and it tends to be getting forgiveness from God. And in Buddhism, we have karma. And actually, whether we're forgiven or not, our karma is going to play out. So, Bhante, in a seminar on the Sutra of Golden Light, said, the Buddhas do not punish. So you could say that the Buddhas forgive all the time. So this is why the texts say, this is in the Sutra Golden Light, may they forgive my sin with minds given over to compassion. Their minds are always given over to compassion. The Buddhas are never likely to punish you for anything that you've done. Their compassion is quite unwavering. They never hold anything against you, whatever you've done. There is, as it were, a constant state of forgiveness as regards ordinary human beings. The Buddha isn't like a sort of god or father figure who might get angry or punish you. The Buddha only forgives, as it were. So if you think of... we do have karma. So with Angulimala, he had killed all those people, and then the Buddha came and decided to follow the Buddha. And then after that, he was a monk, and people were still throwing stones at him. And he went to the Buddha and said, you know, I've changed my ways. And the Buddha basically said, bear it, because his karma was getting played out. So the one place I did find it was in the Nikaya Bala Pandita Sutta, which is a very short sutta. And it says, monks, there are two, these two are fools. Which two? The one who doesn't see his transgression as a transgression, and the one who doesn't rightfully pardon another who has confessed his transgression. These two are fools. These two are wise people. Which two? The one who sees his transgression as a transgression, and the one who rightfully pardons another who has confessed his transgression. These two are wise people. So we can't make anyone forgive. And really, we can't make ourselves forgive either. It has to be a kind of heart turning. We have to want to do it. And it's a bit like faith. We can't make ourselves have shraddha. We just have to open up to that. Setting up the conditions for our hearts to shift, for our heart to open. So I'm part of the reason I'm talking forgiveness is it's kind of a bit of a tricky subject for me. It's not something I necessarily find easy. And when I was younger, my brothers and sisters, we all dealt with things in a different way, and my way of dealing with difficulty was to stop, which is a really not good way to deal with them, because you're hanging on to whatever the pain is. You're not forgiving, and you're kind of feeding it as well. You're feeding the pain. So I don't know what age I was. I'd like to pretend I was very young. Anyway, at some stage, I sent to bed, punished, and I realised that what was happening was I'd get sent to bed, I'd be annoyed, and in the morning, everything was just forgotten. There was no kind of talking about it. And it wasn't necessarily that it wasn't resolved, it didn't feel. So I wrote a note to myself saying, be annoyed at Mum in the morning. It's not good. So that was a real case of holding on tight to the hurt. And of course, it didn't mean anything, because in the morning I didn't feel it, so it was, you know, false. So, just noticing the kind of pain that was causing me. And of course, the other thing with stropping and kind of is actually everyone else has moved on. They're not bothered if you're stropping or not. But you're kind of still kind of feeding those flames. So as I said, the Buddha doesn't say a lot about forgiveness, but he does say quite a lot about letting go of anger, judgment, resentment, unwholesome mind states and thoughts, and what we can do to work with them. So in the Dhammapada, verse 3 to 5, those who entertain such thoughts as he abused me, he beat me, he conquered me, he robbed me, will not still their hatred. Those who do not entertain such thoughts as he abused me, he beat me, he conquered me, he robbed me, will still their hatred. Not by hatred are hatreds ever pacified here in the world. They are pacified by love. This is the eternal law. So when, if we're not forgiving, how does it feel? We're physically holding on, we're tight. And I was thinking about this the other day when I was meditating. And for some reason, I was sitting and I was holding my breath. And I was just suddenly aware that my whole body was just getting tight. And then the second I let my breath out, there was ease. And it's a little bit, that's kind of what happens on a larger scale. So I've got a friend who I met up with, I haven't seen for a long time, a couple of days ago, Gordon. And he's got this dog that bites. And they'd been to lots of training or whatever, and at one point they got to a stage where they thought they'd have to put it down, but they didn't, because they saw this other person who basically spent some time with Gordon and his partner and the dog. And so Gordon was sitting there, and he was sitting kind of upright. This is what he's saying to me. His legs were crossed, and he was a bit tense. And the dog was kind of just walking around, pacing around. And so the person said to Gordon, so why don't you just take a deep breath and just let your breath out? So he did that, and the dog just sat down and then just went to sleep. So the dog kind of was protecting Gordon in some way, but it was picking up completely on his body language. And we do, when we, if we're not forgiving of something, or somebody, what happens is our whole body, when that person is mentioned or we think about that person, we tighten, we tense up. We also have a whole backstory going on about why we shouldn't forgive that person, why we're right and they're wrong. But we physically, it's painful for us. Blame creates separation, and we hold that other person basically at a distance. And what we can do is we blame our mental states on that other person. Because of them, I'm this way. And I remember listening to a talk by Subhuti a while ago, and he said, anyone can say or do anything to you. We still have a choice in how we respond. So we can justify, yeah, but they... But it's like, it's still up to us. We always have a choice. And it's being aware that we have that choice. So Banti talks about this in terms of mind reactive, mind creative. So the reactive mind is mechanical, repetitive, unaware, and unthinking. And the creative mind is much freer. We can respond as we choose. We can be spontaneous. We can be open. With the reactive one, we get straight into a habit. And as I say, it comes with a whole backstory. So we're not seeing that person as they are. We're just there fitting into how we want to see them. So the creative mind is aware, it's awake. And because it's awake, it's well and truly alive and spontaneous. It's free and potentially it's not conditioned. So if someone taps me on the shoulder and I'm doing something and I've been pulled out of that, depending on who it is, will depend on how I respond, even though the same thing can be two different people can do it. So if it's someone who I've got this anger at, that just feeds the story, that another thing they've done. Whereas if it's a friend, I can kind of totally let it go and go, oh, lovely to see you. And yet what's happened has been exactly the same. Naropa, 8th and 8th century teacher, said, samsara is the deluded mind finding faults with others. So forgiveness means letting go of those things that align with our story. They're always this. They're never that. And of course, they're not always that. So say they're always late. We don't notice the times we're actually there on time. They never tidy up. We don't notice the times when they do tidy up. We just, our focus is on the thing that suits our story. So why should we forgive? And it is something we do. It's not, someone can't say you should forgive, but why is it helpful to forgive? Okay. Well, as I said, physically, we're the ones who are suffering. We're carrying on the story. Something's happened in the past, and we're not able to let it go. We're continuing it on, and actually, by continuing it on, we're continuing to suffer. And we can hold a grudge, but we need to notice the state of mind that's doing. So there's a couple of slogans from the mind training. One is drive all blames into one. So it's almost like, well, we can do, and they did this, and they did that, and it's like, okay, so we're just finding that person difficult. Let's not kind of just build on that. And the other one is don't wait in ambush, which I really like, which is, you know, we can think, okay, they've said this, I'll save that and use that at a future date when they're not ready. Yeah, so it's a harbour, isn't it? It's a tensing up. And why do people not forgive? Well, for one, not everyone wants you to forgive. I've been reading this book called The Forgiveness Project, and it's very, very moving. Basically, what happened was, let's see if I can get this woman's name. No, I'll find it later. There's this woman who, it was just before Britain was going to go to war with Iraq, and there were these big demonstrations and protests, and actually went to war anyway. And this woman basically was pulling her hair out, and she thought, well, what can I do to change that? What could I do? So she decided to focus on forgiveness and find stories of people who had forgiven as another way of trying to move things forward. So the book is first of all, she's very clear, it's not religious, People have different takes on forgiveness. There isn't a right way. But what it looks at is just how incredible that it can be. So, for example, one of the things I heard about was that there was this woman who was an eyewitness to a crime, and she gave a statement to the police, and this person went to jail. And that person went to jail for 20 years. And later on, at the 20-year mark, they found out that it wasn't that person. And she was very clear it was him. So she met up with him afterwards and apologised. And he forgave her. So he'd had 20 years in prison, but he realised it wasn't malice on her part, it was a mistake. And now the two of them, I think they're based in America, go around America and give talks about basically the fact that eyewitnesses, you know, they're very unreliable, and she was very clear that it was him, and it wasn't until after that she met this person, and they're now close friends. But there's a lot of stories within that, and often in that book there's in the north, there's quite a few about the north of Ireland. And some people were getting death threats because they forgave. Because they weren't then fitting into that story of we're right, they're wrong, and you're letting the side down. So it's a very strong thing to do. Also there's things like vendetta culture, that whole kind of mafia thing where it's actually seen as you know, you get your own back is a healthy thing. You know, I go back, and then that just continues. And it happened in the North of Ireland, it happened at Israel and Palestine, where, you know, you just keep, it doesn't really matter, it hasn't, somebody somewhere in the family or relation has died, and then you're just going to keep that battle going. And it takes quite a lot of strength to be able to say, no, I'm going to stop that cycle. I'm not going to participate. So again, we've talked about this before, it's going from the closed fist to an open hand. So we have to try to let go of judging others. which can, of course, be quite compelling and addictive. And noticing that kind of the power of righteous indignation, where we are right, and therefore they are wrong. And we have a certainty about that. And I suppose it's open, trying to open up to uncertainty and open up to kind of potentially a vulnerability that maybe we've made a mistake. So what we need to do then is look at what's underneath that blame. Because quite often there'll be pride or shame or fear or pain that's coming at, that we're acting out of. And often it's to do with self-view. It's how we perceive ourselves, or we want other people to perceive us. Also, in a dispute, it's never just one person. There's always two. And if you're involved in that, it's like just noticing, well, what am I bringing to that? What am I bringing to the situation? So we have to try to stop armouring ourselves. And I came across this image of an armadillo. And basically, it's just like a ball of armour. It turns into a ball, and there's no way to get in. And we can do that. We can do that in terms of protecting ourselves. And again, there's that tightness, isn't there? And we have to kind of let ourselves be vulnerable. So we have to let ourselves be vulnerable. Instead of fight, flight, and freeze as reactions, we have to try to, I came across the thing, to attend and befriend. So just be open and be receptive to what's going on, rather than push away, but actually just be with, to stay with. So I heard this story by Ajahn Sujito, and he was on. There was a long retreat, a silent retreat, and there was someone on the retreat who was very, very upset. And she was sitting at this table during a meal, and he just sat opposite her. And she continues to be upset, but he just sat there with her. And at the end of the retreat, she just said how grateful she was that he couldn't do anything, he couldn't make it right, but he was there with her. And later on, she said she was able to be with her sister who was giving birth, and just to be with her when she was in a huge amount of pain, but she stayed there and stayed without that. And again, the sister was really appreciative of that. So sometimes that's all we can do, is just stay with it. Be present. We can't sort it necessarily, but we can be there. So it doesn't necessarily mean, if we forgive, that we're condoning the actions. We're not being a doormat. We're not necessarily letting them off the hook, which is one of the things it can feel like. But we can still forgive. And the Dalai Lama, when he saw what was happening in Tibet and how his monks were being treated, he was very clear that there was anger there, but he didn't hold a grudge. He didn't kind of cling on to it. And I'll talk a bit about anger later. So we need to see that when we're acting unskillfully, and we were talking about this yesterday in terms of hri, it's like it's a positive attribute. It's painful, but it's positive. So we notice we're not living up to our ideals, and that's painful for us. But actually, the noticing of that and the confessing, trying to put right what we can put right, making the intention not to repeat it, and then we can let it go. Whereas with guilt, we just carry it around, which isn't helpful at all, and it's painful for us. So Rumi says, your task is not to seek for love, but merely to seek and find all the barriers within yourself that you have built up against it. And I heard this as a nice quote, forgiveness is giving all hope for a better past. And there are people who we know who are good exemplars of forgiveness. So you've got Mandela. And Mandela, when he went into jail, I mean, he was quite an angry man. But, I mean, he was there for many, many years. But because he was able to forgive, and because he wasn't holding on, that whole process of ending up apartheid was able to happen. But again, there'd be a lot of people who wouldn't have wanted that, who would have been invested on either side with the battle continuing. And also Brian Keenan is another example where he was jailed, basically his hand to a radiator for two or three years, I think. And he recognised at some point that his jailers were also in captivity and were in pain, and was able to see them as human beings rather than them, bad, and me, being caught here. He was able to see the humanity within them. And so he could move on. And there's a story about two Tibetans who had been kept in captivity, and one said to the other, "Have you forgiven your jailers?" And the other one said, "No." And he said, "So, you're still in jail. Because we imprison ourselves." Okay. So, Bodhi Paksha, who is a Scottish tree retina Buddhist living in, where is he?
New Hampshire.
New Hampshire in America. And he set up Wild Mind, which is kind of a meditation website. First of all, he has this lovely quote: "Resentment is the saturated fat of emotions clogging the arteries of our happiness." I quite like that. "Resentment is the saturated fat of emotions clogging the arteries of our happiness." Anyway, on his website, he talks about how to deal with resentment, and I'm going to read some of this out. So 1600 years ago, a compiler and commentator of Buddhist texts called Buddhaghosha put together an extraordinary toolkit of ways to deal with resentment. And he was recently looking at this, and this is part of Buddhaghosha's encyclopedic work on meditation, the Visuddhi Marga, or the Path of Purity. And then there's a list of 12, and I'll just quite quickly go through them. So the first one is the loving kindness, the metta bhavana, and particularly the fourth stage, because we know that it works. We know that if we keep putting that person in that fourth stage, we will change. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're best pals with that person, but potentially they can move to neutral. And the second one he says is reflect that resentment is never justified. And he says, reflect upon the saw, the simile of the saw, which is where basically the Buddha says, he's choosing an extreme example, but he basically says, if you are getting sawed limb from limb, if you hold hatred at any time for the person doing that, then you're not a follower of mine. Okay? So that's quite a big ask. But the idea is that actually we should always try, if we're coming from hatred, then that's not the path. So, yeah, that's, as I say, it's a big ask, but we're then compounding hatred upon hatred. Then the next one, he says, winning the real battle. And he points out that hatred makes you ugly, it causes you pain, it destroys your good fortune, causes you to lose your wealth or not able to have wealth, it distracts you from your reputation, and leads to a bad rebirth. So if we're going to be doing all that, it's not helping us, is it? So why are we doing it? Because it's causing us harm. And then he says the next one is kind of accentuate the positive. Think about the positive of that person. Because, of course, they're not all bad. They're not all whatever it is. They've got lots of other qualities. And quite often, the more difficult if we can't forgive them, it's much more difficult if they're a friend. Because if they're someone we don't know, you can kind of forgive quite easily. But when it's someone who we're close to, then it becomes a lot more difficult. So just notice or remember those times when you did get on, or the qualities that you do admire about them, rather than just focusing on the things we find difficult. Then he talks about you develop compassion. The next one, notice how you're causing yourself suffering, that this is actually having an effect on you. Then reflect that all beings are the owners of their own karma. So in a sense, that's going to take care of itself. We don't have to be deciding what should happen or should not happen to that person. And then it says, reflect on examples or exemplars of patience. And I often think, I usually think of Posada, who probably most of you will know. And I was in an email contact with him the other day, and he didn't write, he didn't say a lot, but he said, I'm keeping quite well, still reflecting, meditating quietly and contented. And I just thought, wow, if I can be doing that at the age of whatever it is, 91, that's rather lovely. And then reflect that all beings have been the dearest friends and relations in a previous life. Okay, so that's in the whole context of rebirth. And then he says, well, he ends up by basically saying, give a gift. So it's a practical thing, actually just do something rather than talk about it. Because that's actually generosity in action. Okay, so the next verse in the Dhammapada, verse 6 goes, others do not realize that we're all heading for death. Those who do realize it will compose their quarrels. And I've got this lovely quote by Carlos Castaneda, when death makes the slightest gesture, all our pettinesses fall away. So recently, my son had a very bad accident, and he could have died. It's very easy he could have died. And what has done, one good thing that's come out of it, is it does put things in perspective. And the things that I was getting quite caught up in actually just are fairly irrelevant in the larger scheme of things. But it was just noticing how it doesn't. And the same thing happened when my dad died, actually, about 5 years ago, that suddenly the things that actually can take a lot of time and a lot of our energy, they're just unnecessary and inconsequential. So we need to be tolerant of others, views, that they may well be different to ours. The Buddha, I couldn't find this, but there's somewhere where the Buddha is walking along and there's somebody behind who is basically trying to put the Buddha down. And there's someone else who starts defending the Buddha, saying about his good qualities. And the Buddha's very clear, he just says, no, I don't need that. It's fine. It doesn't matter if someone's comparing me better than somebody or worse than someone or even the same. Like the worldly winds, basically, that you don't need to defend me. And I don't need to defend myself, because he had confidence in the Dharma. So we need to practice Kshanti, patience. So at the moment, I'm in a bit of disharmony with a couple of people, one in the Sangha and one in my family. And at times, I've wanted to move things forward, but I'm aware that there's two people in both of these conflicts, and we both have to be ready. And there are other times where I've been digging my heels in and I wanted an apology. I've wanted something to happen. Ideally, I would be able to have unconditional forgiveness. But I'm not a bodhisattva. I'm a bodhisattva in training. I don't hold any ill will for either of these people. And I also need to look after myself and not put myself in harm's way. And there's been some people who've been quite keen to move it forward. And I've been working with that, and particularly because I've been going to give this talk, I've been thinking about my partner. And I think part of it has been that their discomfort with the situation, and just it needs time and it needs patience and space. But there's a difference of opinion about something. So the Theravada monks have a tradition that if all else fails, so if they've got about six different things that to try and resolve conflicts, but if all else fails, they have this thing called covering over as with grass. And basically what that means is it's not pretending something hasn't happened, it's acknowledging there's a difference, but it's also realizing that we're not going to be able to sort this and we just need to put it aside and just move forward. So it's agreeing to disagree. So anger is obviously not. Well, it's interesting. So I have quite. I've got quite an issue with anger. In my family, anger was never openly shown, and it was seen as a bad thing. And so I've got quite a fear of anger. So it didn't mean that there wasn't anger there, but it wasn't openly displayed, and if it was, it was seen as... It was never openly really discussed. There was, as I say, there was quite a bit of anger in the household, but it was never really addressed. And I think because of that, I've tended to have quite a... Well, I'm aware now, and this has happened more recently, I've become more aware of, that I've got a heightened kind of response to anger, where I kind of close down. And actually, I'm now aware that anger is just natural. It's a natural, you know, response to something. But that doesn't mean we have to act out of that anger. And if we can redirect that into a kind of healthy direction, in a positive direction, using that energy, because there's energy that gets built up that can be used. So we want to transform that. So we can disapprove of the action that someone's done, but that doesn't mean we have to hate or that person. So Bhante relates this story found in the Sutra of 42 sections. So apparently the Buddha was out about as usual, and he happened to encounter somebody who wasn't very happy with the Buddha. So this person straight away started to abuse the Buddha and called him all sorts of names. The Buddha wasn't universally popular in his own day, and quite a few people did want to choose to try and have a fight with him to try and get one up on him. So he encountered one of these characters and he just started abusing the Buddha. So the Buddha didn't say anything, he just waited for the man to stop. So after 5 minutes of uninterrupted abuse, he just stopped, he got out of breath. So the Buddha very quietly asked him, "Is that all?" So the man was a bit taken aback. He said, "Yes, that's all." And then the Buddha said, "All right, let me now ask you a question." He said, "Suppose you have a friend, and suppose that friend brings along for you one day a present. But suppose you don't want to accept that present. If you don't accept it, to whom does the gift belong?" So he said, "Well, if I won't accept it, well, it belongs to the person who wanted to give it to me." So the Buddha said, "Look here, you have tried to make me a present of this abuse. I decline to accept your present," he said. "Take it, it belongs to you." So the perfection of patience is likened to a great ocean, as whatever falls into it is not disturbed, it does not react. So sometimes we can change letting go into letting be, so that we can be accepting of how things are. And this isn't surrender or passivity or resignation. Nor is it necessarily agreeing with something or liking something. It's just allowing things to be as they are, as they really are. Not fixing others or ourselves, but accepting ourselves just as we are, whilst remembering that change is possible. So who do we need to forgive? Well, first of all, we need to forgive ourselves. And I think, particularly probably in Scotland, that we've got quite hard self-image. We can judge ourselves. And we need to just be aware that we are on a path and that we are moving forward. And I think at times it's important to look back at where we were maybe a few years ago and realise progress has been made. Because yes, we'll make mistakes and yes, we'll get caught. But actually, there's generally movement and we are shifting and things are progressing. We also have to forgive our partners, particularly in our sexual partners, because there's a lot of emotion caught up in that, and there's a lot of expectations. We can have expectations for how we want them to be, we want them to be in the relationship. I've got a friend who I've known for about 20 years, and happy, children, and then one day his wife left him, and she went in his eyes from being the wonder of his eyes to being the complete opposite. And that was it. And he got to the stage where he didn't want anyone who spoke to her, he didn't want to talk to. So it's like, well, what was that about? How can it change from one to the other so quickly? So we just need to be kind of appreciative of our partners, because we'll all make mistakes. And there'll be things that rub them up the wrong way as the same way as they can rub us up the wrong way. And part of the practice is letting go of those little things, having little forgivenesses all the time. Our parents, can we forgive our parents? So I held on to stuff from my parents for quite some time. And then I became aware at one point that they did their best. They had their own conditioning. They had their own stuff they bought. And actually, they did a pretty good job. I'm a kind of healthy human being. It could have been a lot more difficult. We need to forgive our ancestors. So I'm Anglo-Irish, and I've got quite a lot of difficulty with that, or what I perceive that means in terms of privilege, entitlement. So there's a kind of guilt there. And it's like, well, it's not their fault. That's just what I've come from. And finally, we have to forgive our teachers. We have to try to forgive our, or choose to forgive our teachers. And it's all a choice. There's not like, I said have to. It's not have to at all. We have to kind of make peace with it and work out what's right for us. So for me, Bantani acknowledged that he's made mistakes. That he said he wasn't the best man for the job. And actually asked us for forgiveness. And for me, I'm able to do that. I'm hugely appreciative of all that he's done, his way of spreading the Dharma in a way that makes sense to me and has transformed my life. So I've got huge gratitude for that. But we all have to come to terms with that in whatever way we do. But I think gratitude is very important in terms of forgiveness. That we need to recognise what we have, what we've been given. The fact that we're here today in a Buddha centre, with the Sangha around, that's a hugely valuable thing to have in our life. So I read this story about two friends, and they're talking to each other. One says to her, you were there, you were always there. When I dropped out of college, you were there. When my marriage broke down, you were there. You were there when I lost my job, and when my partner died. And then he turns to the person and says, I think you're giving me bad luck. But we do have friends. We do have the Sangha. The Sangha is... I mean, I've been incredibly supported when my son had his accident. And just the friendship and the love that's been shown, it means a lot. So I came across this Vishal Pani's version of the Four Reminders. And when he's talking about this special opportunity, he says, well, I have my health, I have energy, I have the ability to think and feel freely. I have enough food and enough money to meet my needs. I live in a country that is free from war and many of the other difficulties people can face. I am not trapped in a negative state of mind like madness, craving, hatred or depression. All of these things can change, but while I have these advantages, I have a great opportunity. I have had the great good fortune to meet the Dharma. The Buddha taught it. It has been practiced down the generations, and thanks to my teachers, it has come to my country and into my life in a form I can understand and accept. I have had the good fortune to meet an effective Sangha, whose members offer me guidance and friendship. All these conditions have made the Dharma a presence in my life and made its practice possible for me. So we have to make the most of this opportunity. We're incredibly fortunate. And we have to be careful not to get overwhelmed by the task ahead of us. So we need to keep in touch with what feeds us, nurture ourselves, and then go out into the world and practice and exemplify with a heart of love and compassion. So Ajahn Chah, a forest monk, said, let go a little and you will get a little peace. Let go a lot and you will get a lot of peace. Let go completely, and you will find complete peace. So there's a Zen story of a monk being chased by a tiger, and finally he just falls over the off a precipice, and he's hanging on by a limb, and the tiger is pacing back and forth up above. And there are jagged rocks below. And he says, help, help, is there anyone there? And then there's a reply, yes. And he says, I'll do anything. Tell me what to do. And the voice says, let go. And then he says, is there anyone else there? So sometimes letting go is quite tricky. So, at the end of the rains retreat, traditionally, the monks would ask each other for forgiveness. The most junior would ask the most senior, and then the most senior would ask the most junior. And I'm going to just read out what's often said in these. If I have harmed anyone in any way, either knowingly or unknowingly, through my own confusions, I ask their forgiveness. If anyone has harmed me in any way, either knowingly or unknowingly, through their own confusions, I forgive them. And if there is a situation I am not yet ready to forgive, I forgive myself for that. For all the ways that I harm myself, negate, doubt, belittle myself, judge, or be unkind to myself through my own confusions, I forgive myself. And that was done because the monks would gather together for the rainy season, for the Vassa, and they'd come far and wide, and then they probably wouldn't see each other until the next one. So they could leave free from hurt and blame. So as I said, we need to be fed. And one of the ways we can do that is getting in touch with nature. So I'm just going to end with a poem by Wendell Berry, The Peace of Wild Things. When despair for the world grows in me, and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water, and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water, and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time I rest in the grace of the world and am free.